Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
The national news here in the States just was very biased, and you know the reporters kind of just didn't do their homework. They bought into these ideas, and that it was easy. As someone says in the film, you know, if you wanted to do a story on crack, you just, you know, sent the reporter down to Martin Luther King Avenue, which there's a Martin Luther King Avenue, for those who don't know, in every single city in the United States. And every single city in the United States, it runs through a black neighborhood, you know, if you know Martin Luther King, and they would send their reporters down to Martin Luther King, and they would take, you know, shots of young guys standing out on the street, and you know, they would say, here's the crack epidemic, here it is.
Let's have a conversation with Stanley Nelson. He is the director of the amazing new film Crack: Cocaine, Corruption and Conspiracy. It's on Netflix and you've got to watch it. It delves into everything we think we know about the 80s crack epidemic, and we use the word epidemic in quotation marks throughout this podcast, and you'll see why. So yeah, let's have a conversation with Stanley Nelson. This is Scroobius Pip's Distraction Pieces Network, brought to you by Acast, in association with Leap and Leap UK. Let's get into this. Here we go. Behind your barricades. Yeah, but how long can I stay? Behind your barricades. Where true values seldom stray. Thank you so much for joining us. And yes, we're going to go straight into this with Stanley Nelson. As I said, the director of the brilliant new film Crack: Cocaine, Corruption and Conspiracy. It's one of those films that you've got to watch. And not only that, you've got to pass on to the next person to watch, and the next person, and the next person, because these are all the themes that we need to discuss within drug policy. And as ever, this show is produced in association with Leap and Leap UK. So that's Law Enforcement Action Partnership. Go and find us on social media on both sides of the Atlantic. And let's keep these conversations going. So thank you so much, Stanley Nelson from Firelight Media, for joining us. Go watch the film on Netflix, and let's have this chat. Well, where do we start with this? And this is going to be my first question to you, Stanley, is how on earth did you go about deconstructing this whole issue with regards to crack? Let's just give it its full title. Crack, Cocaine, Corruption and Conspiracy. Where do we start on this?
Yeah, I mean, I think that in one way we really started with the at ground level with the users and the community people that were affected by it, and then with the dealers and really wanted to get them first, and then kind of built from there, you know, with law enforcement, with politicians, with the federal government, you know, the international piece of it, the Iran-Contra piece. But really, we wanted to make sure that we talk to people on the ground level, people whose lives were in many ways ruined by the whole crack epidemic.
This is the thing with the crack epidemic, is that once you start pulling away at one string, there's so much that comes down. And as you said, the sprawling nature of this subject is so huge that not only do we tackle the domestic issues with regards to, as we say, the ghetto and things like that, which is, you know, a hideous term in itself, but what we're doing with internationally. So to start with, when did you, you've lived through that era. So you mentioned in the film that you saw traffic lines getting queued up, just like a drive-through to buy a crack. So what was it like experiencing that firsthand?
You know, the 80s and early 90s, you know, here in New York City and so many other places in the United States was just, you know, unreal. It was surreal, you know, because at first, you know, the police did nothing to stop it. So that, you know, there were dealers, you know, there were whole blocks that were just devoted to crack and cocaine. You know, you couldn't walk through the block. Your cars were lined up, you know, to buy crack. People would come from, you know, the suburbs and surrounding areas to buy crack. You know, it was just right in your face. You did not have to be, you know, Sherlock Holmes to find, to discover crack and discover the dealers. It was just everywhere. You know, people had, you know, these locks that they put on their cars, you know, so you couldn't move the steering wheel. they had radios that you would pull out of the car, you know, to take with you so that you couldn't leave your radio. They would put signs in their car windows, you know, no radio. And finally, the worst that I ever saw were, you know, that were removable steering wheels. So you could remove your steering wheel and take it with you. So that you know, make your car the hardest one on the block to steal.
And you make a really good point in the film that in the 80s, when the crack epidemic was getting media prominence, there was another drug as well. Well, it's the same drug. It was cocaine. It was powder cocaine. So what was the reason, in your opinion, and you do discuss this in the film, that there's such a discrepancy on how the media and society dealt with crack cocaine and how it dealt with powder cocaine?
Well, you know, like I say, at first, you know, the whole crack epidemic was kind of ignored. You know, it just was kind of let go. And then once the media and politicians kind of, you know, glommed onto it, you know, it became a big issue with them. It was decided by politicians that, you know, cocaine was the drug that was used by middle class people and, you know, was not out there in your face. And crack was used by, you know, people in the, quote, again, ghetto, and that you know, they were robbing and stealing to get money to buy crack. So finally they passed a law, and, you know, the same mandatory sentence was handed down to people who had 5 grams of crack, to people that had 500 grams of cocaine. And so, you know, you have to understand what 5 grams look like. 5 grams is like, you know, 5 sugar packets, you know, like you get in a coffee shop, and you can easily put it in your pocket. And you know, it's not like you're a seller of crack. It's you're a user. So you know, and you got mandatory sentences, which means that, you know, judges had no discretion. You know, if you was a first offense, you got a certain sentence. If it was a second, it was a third. And, you know, up to, you know, 15 or more years for possession of small amounts of crack.
You really do get across the human interest of this story within the film. And there's so many emotional tales and the discrepancy that goes on with powder and crack. At what point in your mind, was it during the filming process or was it during your life that you realized you started piecing this together of this is more than just a drug issue, this is a societal issue?
Yeah, I mean, I think that you know, we started piecing it together, you know, back there in the kind of crack era. And you know, it really became apparent that we could look at this, you know, in the last couple of years, you know, through the lens of time, that really, you know, we could look at it much more rationally than it was looked at, you know, back then. And so many things have come together and we understand them, you know, based on, you know, the crack epidemic and the crack era. You know, finally, you know, there was, you know, the war on drugs, and this was a huge thing in the United States. You know, it was called the war on drugs, and it was not only the discrepancy in sentences for crack and for powdered cocaine, but also, you know, these long sentences, the militarization of police, where we see the police, you know, carrying, you know, huge automatic weapons. You know, usually, you know, we thought of the cop on the beat, you know, swinging a baton, you know, and walking the streets, you know, and now, you know, they look like something out of Star Wars, you know, with the armor and the tanks and the automatic weapons.
I'm glad you said that there's literal tanks. We're in the footage that you've managed to get of literal tanks ram raiding buildings. As you said, this is the epicenter of where the militarization started. So in your opinion, I'd imagine it is so, but the war on drugs, is that why we've now got the issues that we're dealing with now with regards to the real, yeah, the real disconnect between the police and society?
I mean, it's a big part. It just, you know, I think there was always kind of a disconnect, but it just really heightened that and made cops, you know, think of themselves as the military instead of, you know, people that patrol the community and, you know, that now there it is like an invading force. And, you know, we show them, you know, knocking down doors and, piling out of you know personnel carriers and just you know crazy stuff and you know the incarceration rate here in the United States just goes nuts. You know more and more people are incarcerated, more and more people get longer and longer sentences. And one thing that I should say is that people weren't offered treatment. That this was the only solution. The only solution was a policing solution and, locking people up and throwing away the key. We interview one woman in the film who talks about being arrested for possession of crack 5 times, going to jail 5 times. And never is she offered treatment. She never goes to jail for committing a crime other than having crack on her person. And obviously she had a drug problem, not a criminal problem.
I think you do a really good job of highlighting the distrust that goes with society and not just the police, but also the medical profession. Because you highlight a case as well of a woman that was very honest with her doctor, said she needed help, and then she ended up in prison and didn't get any help. How do we go about addressing that?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's one of the great stories we tell in the film, because we talked to this woman who was actually the first person that was convicted of dealing crack to her unborn fetus. And what they accused her of was in the 30 seconds when the baby is born and before the umbilical cord is cut, in that 30 seconds, she's dealing drugs from her bloodstream to the baby's bloodstream. And she actually at first is convicted of dealing drugs to her own baby. But as you said, she was really an interesting person because, you know, before that, she, as she's pregnant, she tells her doctor that, you know, she has a drug problem, you know, and she's trying to seek help. She tells her doctor that she has a drug problem, and her doctor calls the police, and that's why she's in custody when she gives birth, and that's why she's accused of dealing drugs to her baby.
The interviewees that you've got on the film are just brilliant. Not only have you got investigative journalists, you've got Dr. Carl Hart, a scientist, you've got the personal tales as well. And the emotions that cross over, I've never seen Dr. Carl Hart as emotional as what he was in your film. And a lot of it evolves around only his personal experience, but also the fact that his job is to disentangle the confusion that goes on with science. And that's one of the things that definitely comes across in the film, is that we have no idea with science, and the crack babies is one of them, and I use that in quotation marks. You give quite a portion of the film to crack babies. Can you give a little bit of an overview of that whole portion? Because I think it's genuinely fascinating to the people that don't necessarily understand this discussion.
Sure. As the press and politicians latched on to the crack epidemic, there was nobody who was lobbying against them. There was nobody who was supporting, crack addicts. So they just go wild. And one of the ways they go wild is to talk about, crack babies and crack mamas. And there's this narrative where at one point, we have a clip where they're saying that 100,000 crack babies are going to be born in New York City alone and overwhelm the school system, and they're going to be brain damaged for life. And that's the narrative that went out. That was the narrative that went out in print news. That was the narrative that went out in TV news. That was the narrative that went out. And, we have people in the film, Carl Hart and others, who say, that it was just bunk. It was really perpetrated by one doctor and one study that was really flawed, you know, about how many babies would be affected and actually the effect on babies. So, you know, that became a kind of a stereotype and a phrase, you know, crack babies, crack babies, crack babies. And, you know, we have a montage of clips from the news where, you know, they're constantly talking about this thing that never really happened and never really was.
The overlaps are just incredible. And you mentioned that the media played such a role in it. So from your perspective as a filmmaker now, what do you think of the media that we still get in today with the war on drugs and Black Lives Matter as regards to the same kind of parallel principles as what we were seeing then with disinformation? Does it kind of correspond in your mind that there's still the same rhetorics and narratives that are coming out?
I think that, you know, the media played a huge part. You know, they kind of weren't doing their homework, and you know, the national news here in the States just was very biased, and you know, the reporters kind of just didn't do their homework. They bought into these ideas, and that it was easy. As someone says in the film, you know, if you wanted to do a story on crack, you just, you know, sent the reporter down to Martin Luther King Avenue, which there's a Martin Luther King Avenue, for those who don't know, in every single city in the United States. And every single city in the United States, it runs through a black neighborhood, you know, if you, you know, Martin Luther King, and they would send their reporters down to Martin Luther King, and they would take, you know, shots of young guys standing out on the street, and, you know, they would say, here's the crack epidemic, here it is. And that's, you know, what happened over and over again. So I think, you know, the press, you know, just really let the public down. If you believe that the press's real mission and duty should be to serve the public.
And as you said, there's no one lobbying for someone that's addicted to crack or something like that. And the you do the film in chapters. So we do the domestic story. And then, as we've just alluded to just a moment ago, the international story is just mind-boggling in its own right. This is the Reagan era. So again, can you give a brief overview without giving too much away, because I really want people to watch this film, of what that international picture is?
Yeah, I mean, you know, it was during what's called, you know, now looking back, you know, the Iran-Contra affair. So Ronald Reagan wanted to support rebels against the leftist socialist government in Nicaragua. And finally, Congress said, you know, we're not going to pay for your kind of dirty war down there. We're not going to pay. We're going to cut off funding. So the Reagan White House, Reagan government came upon a scheme to sell weapons to Iran and then take the money from sales of weapons to Iran and funnel it to Nicaragua. But while they did this, they got in bed with a whole bunch of kind of a really criminal type people, you know, really, you know, bad folks. You know, they said to themselves, well, you know, we're in Nicaragua, we got a bunch of empty planes, you know, let's load them up with cocaine and fly them back to the United States. You know, and you know, there's been a lot of debate about whether, you know, the Reagan government helped them, you know, really supported them, or just turned their back on them and just turned their back and let them do it. But at the very least, the Reagan government turned, just let them do it and, you know, knew what was going on and didn't stop them, because the Reagan government was much more concerned with fighting a war in Nicaragua against the legitimate government in Nicaragua than keeping cocaine off the streets of the United States. And so if cocaine floods into the United States, that's one of the couple of different reasons, but cocaine floods into the United States and becomes cheaper, and then leads to, you know, the ability to cook it up and down to its pure form, and then they start calling it crack.
At what point did you decide that you wanted to take a look at this subject and make it into a film? Was it the fact that you did live through it, or was it things since then that has led you to, well, I'd imagine you was compelled to make this film with just how passionate it comes across?
Yeah, I think that I've always been, you know, interested in kind of the drug culture and drug economy and different drugs. I did a film a long time ago about methadone, the methadone maintenance program in the United States, and did a couple of films about drug problem or you know drugs in the United States when I worked for Bill Moyers. But I really had the chance to make this film about crack and really kind of jumped at it because I thought it was really time that we looked back, you know, and that we looked back with really clear eyes on you know what was really devastating to so many people and what changed, you know, finally so many things about the United States.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Given how big and vast the subject matter is, and as I said, you've done it in chapters, was it a headache to try and get it into a narrative that people can understand, given it is so vast?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think in some ways, you know, it was more not a headache. It was more of a puzzle, you know, that we had to kind of put together the different pieces. And we came up with a chapter structure because, you know, it was almost like it was in chapters, you know, that there was, you know, cocaine that was in clubs and people were sniffing cocaine and it was really cool. And, it was something that people did. And then, you know, it kind of morphs into crack. And then, you know, young people in especially the inner cities feel like that, as one person said, it's a gold rush, you know, and all of a sudden you could make some money and sell crack, and then the government involvement, and then leads to militarization and other things. So I think it naturally kind of lent itself to be the story lent itself to being told in chapters, and that's how we came up with the chapter structure.
What's the reaction been like to the film? What kind of feedback have you had from it?
We've had incredible feedback. You know, I mean, I think that people have really seen it as an eye opener. Especially, you know, I mean, what's not surprising, but you know, is kind of interesting, is really especially young people. You know, people who weren't around then, you know, because, you know, they kind of have heard the term, you know, they've heard the term crack epidemic, crack era, you know, crack babies, crack mama, you know, and you know, we kind of let you see in the film how those things evolved. And so I think that the reaction has been amazing. And, you know, I've got a lot of, you know, texts and email from young people, from, you know, my kids, friends, and that it was a real eye opener for them.
I'm almost reluctant to say the words crack epidemic, and it is caveated in the film, because as much as we are talking in those terms, we are talking more in terms of poverty and lack of opportunity, and it's certainly addressed in the film. So are we getting any closer to addressing those things, or do we still lateral the ball to the drug itself?
I think that crack as a drug and kind of as an epidemic, you know, as an era has faded, you know, But, you know, we've got into another era of you know, heroin and heroin substitutes. And that's, you know, I mean, we say a little bit about this in the film, that that's kind of being handled in a different way, you know, where it's always talked about as a health problem, you know, not as a chemical problem. And I think that I would say that a lot of it is because of who's using drugs these days, you know, that it's not black and brown people, it's mainly white folks who are, you know, becoming addicted to opioids, and you know, and it's thought of in a very different way than you know, the crack epidemic before that.
There's certainly a standout quote in the film from a congressman that said, with regards to the heavy-handed nature of sentencing, as you said, the mandatory minimums, it seemed like a good idea at the time. looking back, surely it's not. Surely we've got to learn from what's gone on in that era, surely.
I mean, yeah, you know, Charles Rangel says that, who's a congressman, who was a congressman from New York, who, you know, I mean, you know, he served, I don't know the exact, but like 50 years or 40 years. I mean, you know, he's not just, you know, any congressman. He's just, you know, he's, you know, famous. And I think that, you know, he's really looking back on it and you know, regretting some of the things that happened, you know. And, you know, he said, well, I guess it's just seemed like a good idea at the time. I think it's really fascinating, too, that we talk about how, you know, black politicians and also black clergy and black community people, you know, it got so bad that all of them were calling, you know, for anything to end, you know, this influx of crack into the communities. You know, I mean, it's amazing that we have marches in the film where people, black folks are marching to try to get more police in their neighborhood, you know. And if you think about, you know, what's happening today in the United States, you'd never have that. You couldn't imagine black people saying, we need more police. But they actually, black people are actually doing that. Clergy were saying that. Politicians were saying that, you know, we need more police in the community because we've got to do something to stop this. That's how bad it got.
Presumably, as a filmmaker, someone that's distributing information, that part of it, because I was going to bring that part up, that is so interesting, the fact that black communities were trying to self-police, trying to stop the crack influx. Is it just the media and information issue that once we understand it is about poverty, it is about lack of opportunity, we might actually start to do things better and we might actually progress in this day and age?
Yeah, I mean, I think so. I mean, you know, it's... you know, it's you know, who are the people who have power and who are the people that have power to make change? I mean, I think that's part of the problem. And in so many of black and brown communities, you know, we don't have the power to make change, and we didn't have the power to make change. You know, the film starts off, you know, with Reagan accepting the nomination. And, you know, it's an amazing clip when he accepts the nomination. He says, you know, I accept this nomination and we will make America great again, you know, which Trump, you know, echoed. You know, that's what he's talking about. And then, you know, 2 years into his administration, you know, unemployment is at an all-time high, especially in the black community. You know, welfare, people are being cut off welfare, school programs are being cut off. So when crack gets introduced, you know, it's at a real low point. There's no money and no industry in so many black and brown communities. And again, you know, crack is looked at as a gold rush, you know, in the hood, you know, a way to make money. And at first, a way to make money with no consequences. I think, you know, it's really important that we understand that the film ends, you know, where we revisit the people who were using crack and the people who were selling crack, and their lives are devastated. You know, Samson Styles, who says that, you know, it's a gold rush to the hood, ends up, you know, getting shot 5 times and spending 2 terms in jail. You know, the people, you know, who are on crack are still suffering today in many ways. So, you know, what was thought of as a gold rush to the hood and you know, a free for all, you know, ends up, you know, with the community devastated.
So thank you so much for joining me, Stanley. I could speak to you for hours. So going forward, what can we do with this film? How can we get it out there to the ears that need to listen? You know, what would be your advice?
Tell all your friends. You know, one of the great things about this film is it's on Netflix. It's the first film that I've done for Netflix, and you know, it's always on. You know, it's not like, you know, we premiere it and it goes away. It's on. You can watch it. It's just as relevant, you know, today as 2 weeks ago when it was first released. So, you know, please just let people know. You know, I think that. You know, it's not only an important film, but it's also a very entertaining film.
Thank you so much for joining us, Stanley. And I hope the UK watch this because they need to learn as well. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for joining us on that conversation, Stanley. So needed. And get on Netflix, watch the film, watch Crack, and share it on social media. That's what we need to do with these films. We need to make sure we contextualize the issue and make people watch. And thank you to Firelight Media for producing the film and also coordinating that conversation with Stanley. All your help was really appreciated. And if you're interested in the work of Law Enforcement Action Partnership, LEAP, then we're active all around the world, but perhaps most in the UK and North America. So in the UK, we're at ukleap.org on our Facebook and website, and our Twitter and Instagram is ukleap. And in North America, the Twitter is Police for Reform and the website is lawenforcementactionpartnership.org. Please get involved, share, subscribe, all those things. And a few thank yous. Thank you so much to the producers of the show, Nikki, Tristan, John. Thank you for all you do. Thank you to John Harris at the Distraction Pieces Network. Thank you to My Name Is Ad for the artwork you do. And thank you to Johnny Borrell for the theme music. Right, on that note, there's so much more to come from Stop and Search. Make sure you subscribe, tune in, and all those things. I'll see you next time. Thank you so much. Bye. Behind your barricades. Yeah, but how long can I stay? Behind your barricades. Where true values seldom stray.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.